Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
This is Dale Hurd of CBN News, and you're listening to Audrey Russo on the Real Talk Radio Show.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Exxon knew. Knew what, you might ask? Well, Exxon knew and knows the campaign of lies being perpetrated against them by the climate industry. And that campaign hopes to hurt the fossil fuel industry and eventually hurt the average citizen. And we're going to expose this campaign and more with my next guest. For my new listeners, Christopher Horner is the Executive Director of Government Accountability and Oversight, a nonprofit public interest law firm seeking to bring transparency to the actions of government at state, local, and federal levels. As an attorney in Washington, D.C., Chris has represented nonprofits like CEI, as well as scientists and members of the U.S. Congress on matters of environmental policy in the federal courts and the Supreme Court. He's also a New York Times bestselling author of several books, including The Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming and Environmentalism, Red Hot Lies, How Global Warming Alarmists Use Threats, Fraud, and Deception to Keep You Misinformed, and his most recent, The Liberal War on Transparency, Confessions of a Freedom of Information Criminal. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Christopher Horner. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you, Audrey.
It's always great to have you with us. And we're going to jump right in here. Chris, many people may have noticed the hashtag Exxon New. Would you share what provoked this and if it has anything to do with the litigation launched by the New York AG toward ExxonMobil?
A great question. It has everything to do with what just kicked off today in court in New York, which is not just disgraceful, but should be alarming. It represents a weaponization of law enforcement that we haven't seen, certainly in modern times. So what happened was, you can go back to years ago, there began this campaign of litigation targeting particular companies, maybe in hopes of a jury sympathizing, but maybe also hoping for industry to do what industry generally does, which is just accept that a shakedown is a shakedown and find a way out, pay off. And it was climate nuisance. It was a claim that the companies were causing various weather and climatic phenomena, including erosion, sea level rise, things that go on constantly, particularly between ice ages. Mm-hmm. So the plaintiff's lawyers, the tort bar, just kept failing because it's an implausible case. Okay, they continued to not be able to make their case. So they set up a meeting in La Jolla, California, lawyers, PR people, activists, a lot of Rockefeller. Rockefellers are at the root of this, as I'll mention in a minute. Rockefellers who started Exxon, what became ExxonMobil. And it's, as typically happens with wealth around the third generation, they're just, I don't know, it's now it's fashionability, but also just they're besotten with guilt. And, and that with, you know, why am I so wealthy and there must be something wrong and now I'm going to buy indulgences or something with my typically progressive, as we call it, activism. Right. So there's this meeting in 2012 and the lawyer chapter, I mentioned this to you once because one of the sessions was by an academic who invented something called atmospheric trust litigation for this.
Right.
The atmosphere is held in trust and we need to have a lawsuit whereby the courts take over policymaking. Now, most of your listeners just spit out their coffee or whatever they're having right now.
That yeah.
Courts are not, decidedly not to engage in policymaking under our system, but the policymaking process has disappointed these people because they're pushing something that really no free society would do to itself. Hence the panic, must act now, can't describe the horrors, sign here, details to follow, and yet they still can't fully prevail, get everything they want now. Well, that session led to, in the slideshow that we obtained under the Oregon public records law, that slideshow in 2012 called for litigation that is in the Ninth Circuit right now and said as part of a media campaign, they would coordinate it with worldwide children's protests, which may sound familiar. It's been embodied by St. Greta, but this is in fact this so-called civil disobedience sponsored by the state, which is really the best kind of civil disobedience, of children taking to the streets, skipping school. Very hard to convince children to skip school, by the way.
Yeah.
Particularly when their teachers tell them you really ought to. And we've got instances of that, kids being punished for not participating and so on. Well, that was cooked up at this La Jolla meeting. What else was cooked up was this plaintiff's lawyer, who had been failing in these cases, wrote in a report they ended up publishing, they wanted, quote, a single sympathetic attorney general or even district attorney. And the point was to begin subpoenaing, investigating private parties to get records that might help the plaintiff's lawyers. Mm-hmm. So that's unseemly. It's sordid. It's abusive. It's scandalous. But through this several year campaign we've engaged since April of 2016, we've been through litigation generally extracting documents from these attorney general's offices showing that's exactly what these lawyers did. So it led to Exxon New. Exxon seemed to have been targeted as most likely to settle. There are three demands: that you stop opposing this agenda, and Exxon had stopped opposing this agenda. It was promoting various ways to find a pass through to, well, it's inevitable, so let's find a way that hurts us the least and we can pass it through. Right. That's a very common Washington corporate approach. It's also very unfortunate. Mm-hmm. So they all parties were also supposed to stop supporting public interest groups like the ones I worked with.
Right.
And ExxonMobil indeed had, but then stopped supporting these groups. The third thing was a massive settlement, minimum $200 billion,
whoa,
because that's what the tobacco settlement was. And so that's where the lawyers wanted to start, in 1996 dollars, which means 300 something billion as an opening bid. But of course, energy is much bigger than tobacco and so on. So you're talking about many hundreds of billions of dollars to probably push a few entrants out of the market, secure the place for others, because this would be passed through. And of course, they're targeting coal and now natural gas for extinction. Good luck. I mean, you can't control the climate, but you can kill millions trying or pretending you can, and that's what this would do. So these plaintiffs' lawyers recruit AGs, we now know, and voila, in November, Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, then the Attorney General of New York, subpoenas ExxonMobil, and around the same time, by the way, these public interest groups I worked with were also subpoenaed by an attorney general as part of this.
Wow.
for a decade's worth of documents. I mean, truly, truly harassing, disruptive, expensive, threatening, intimidation campaigns, but fishing expeditions that we now know were at the request of trial lawyers.
Wow.
And so this all began in 2012 because of earlier failed lawsuits. And then in 2015, the Rockefeller Family Foundation began underwriting, various Rockefeller interests, but Rockefeller Family Foundation began recruiting Schneiderman to do this. Hmm. And they underwrote journalism to target the company at a publication seemingly created for the purpose called Inside Climate News, where they hired a former LA Times reporter, real activist. I dealt with her before. And also the Columbia School of Journalism, where they put a guy in charge who had just written a book pushing this. So it was very well arranged, very expensive, very well organized, very coordinated. Right. And Columbia University planted a series in the Los Angeles Times. Inside Climate News ran a series. Nobody acknowledged that the Rockefellers had paid them to do this. The Rockefellers denied having paid them to target Exxon. The Rockefellers later admitted they paid them to target Exxon, as if it was the most natural thing in the world. And of course, we've always been at war with East Asia Winston, as if, well, of course. And they just quietly changed some websites and then acknowledged it in a piece in the New York Review of Books and so on, as if they'd never been denying this.
Right.
And that's because the facts were coming out. And they were coming out because documents were leaking from meetings, follow-up meetings at Rockefeller Family Foundation, mm-hmm. to, quote, delegitimize Exxon to, among their common goals, again, meeting with lawyers, same lawyers, activists, Rockefellers, mm-hmm. to establish in public's mind that Exxon is a corrupt institution that has pushed humanity, parentheses, and all creation, which was a really nice flourish,
yeah.
toward climate chaos and grave harm. To delegitimize them as a political actor and, quote, to drive divestment from Exxon. So, as the Wall Street Journal noted, that's a nice religious touch there with all creation thing. And this is a faith. This is a religion of theirs.
Sure.
And Exxon, me, and others are heretics who must be effectively burned at the stake. So that was the origin of what's actually in court this week in New York. It's supposed to go on for up to 3 weeks. And in the run-up, the Massachusetts Attorney General sent a letter to Exxon that came out, I don't know, maybe last week, saying, we too are going to file suit against you. And if you don't mind, let me tell you why that's particularly interesting.
Yeah.
We have sued the Massachusetts Attorney General.
Right.
And we had just released the day this news broke. This news broke at night. And I was up, I don't know, till 1 a.m. lining up publications for climatelitigationwatch.org because we have so many documents exposing this attorney general, what she was doing. This Maura Healey had done a few things. She took a briefing by the very same plaintiff's lawyer, a secret meeting, where he gave a slideshow called, believe it or not, What Exxon Knew. This was in January of 2016. In March of 2016, the attorney general takes another briefing from him by the same title with other attorneys general, and they walk out straight from that room on stage with an investor named Al Gore, invested in, you know, quote, alternatives to things that work. And she announced an investigation into, you'll never guess, quote, What Exxon Knew. So this is renting law enforcement to ideological interests, private agendas. So major donors, Tom Steyer was pleading for this. We now know from what are called privilege logs produced in our lawsuits against the New York AG. It took years. It was years in the making. These investigations have now gone on for 4 years. And the Massachusetts Attorney General, even though there's an agreement to wait until certain other litigation is settled, then sends this letter to create attention for herself, whatever, less than two weeks before this New York trial starts, clearly just to distract the company, mm-hmm. clearly in violation of an agreement that it was stayed. It's just a remarkable, that's a lot of details. But if you want to see the documents, they're at climatelitigationwatch.org, and you can see these are emails from plaintiffs' lawyers to attorneys general's offices saying, hey, look at these stories in the Los Angeles Times and Inside Climate News. I would like you to investigate these people I happen to be suing and getting nowhere with. And they go out on stage, and not only does the Massachusetts AG and the New York AG, but investor Al Gore all say that this is happening because of stories we found in the Los Angeles Times and Inside Climate News. Uh-huh. Well, we see emails by which an organization, Michael Bloomberg, set up that what they do is they plant these stories, then they send these stories to attorneys general saying, boy, wouldn't you like to investigate this? If you're not shocked by now and just needing to take a shower because this is so sordid, then I have not been making my case very clear because there's so many details. It's truly, truly a revolution in what we used to view as law enforcement. And now is, you know, some of your listeners may sympathize with this. You've seen in Washington this growing disturbing trend of using prosecution to go after not offenses, but to go after people.
Right.
Or entities. So you target somebody. It's like a man once said, I think it was Beria, show me the man and I'll show you the crime. That's what's going on. They're prosecuting people. Mm-hmm. They're prosecuting companies. Show me the company. Well, this one's out of favor. Let's find the crime. And if you don't think that if this is permitted to stand, you could be next, then again, not paying attention, because there's simply no limiting principle here. If you are politically out of favor, then you can be targeted by prosecution for the reason that you are politically out of favor,
right,
which is specifically something one of our great Supreme Court justices, Justice Jackson, warned about. He said, this is what prosecutors tend to do when they slip their moorings, and we have to be particularly vigilant against it. Well, we're not at all vigilant against it, apparently, because you don't hear any media curiosity or complaint about this, as you might if, say, a tort lawyer had asked a conservative AG to investigate the renewable energy industry.
Right.
Now, would that be wrong? Apparently not. But I bet we could prove that the standards would be different once the parties were different.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you have the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. They held a hearing on examining the oil industry's efforts to suppress the truth about climate change. Now, is this a coincidence, or might there be some in the House trying to help the New York AG in his pursuit?
Precisely. So there's this case in New York is falling apart. The New York Post had a piece maybe Monday night saying the case is most notable for how badly it's fizzled. This whole Exxon New climate case has come down to an accounting dispute. Because after years of fishing, I mean, complete open-ended, taking millions of pages out of the company, just as the plaintiff's lawyer asked them, they apparently couldn't find anything. So now it's an accounting dispute. So we have the Massachusetts AG pull that stunt I mentioned, which is in violation of her agreement, frankly absurd, given we had just obtained from them the document showing why she was doing this because a plaintiff's lawyer asked her to, one down the street from her.
Sure.
And now we have a House hearing that is what we've seen recently, and a colleague of mine testified on this in September. We've seen congressional committees now being used the way that Michael Bloomberg is using attorneys general.
Mm.
They are using AG, anybody with subpoena power, just like that plaintiff's lawyer called for in 2012, is being used to assist private agendas. So if you've got a failing or nascent or notional litigation campaign, you can have a congressional committee go after your targets to help you out. Thoroughly abusive. And so now there's a congressional hearing, just a hearing, mind you, reprising a previous hearing with the star players from those secret meetings I just told you about, named Naomi Oreskes. She was from she organized the La Jolla meeting, and here she is testifying this week. And she just put a paper out that one of the subjects whose work was used called it unreproducible, biased, useless, bad work. It was all about how, again, this idea that a company or companies knew something that even this UN body, this hysterical UN body called the IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, It's odd that all these decades, supposedly Exxon knew, all of these bodies created and heavily financed in order to find and claim proof, never were able to claim. But somehow a company really knew something that this alarmist panel still can't claim. It's beyond absurd theater, but we have to sort of not scoff at it, because again, the point here is this pattern of abuse. When you give certain people power, they can thoroughly abuse it. And this is actually an industry now to do so with subpoena power. If you're an AG, you know, AGs became the target of the left. And I've pulled together a slideshow with lots of evidence of this. Mm-hmm. AGs became the apple of the donors, progressive donors' eye after things didn't go their way, particularly in 2016. A big focus was made to elect progressive AGs to use them as the way to get policy and go after opponents.
Yeah. You brought up the Massachusetts AG. Didn't she also file a consumer protection climate suit? It's just, to me, so abusive of the legal system. But did she also do that?
She notified ExxonMobil that she was now going to do that. And what's remarkable about that is we had to sue to get these documents, even though they plainly weren't privileged. But we obtained the agenda from something called the secret meeting at Harvard. That's what an academic professor called it, not once but twice, when boasting to friends in an email. Oh. Hey, I'm going to give this slideshow at a secret meeting at Harvard next week. I can't talk to you about it, but I will. Well, flash forward through various lawsuits, and we find emails in which the Union of Concerned Scientists, which, just like this plaintiff's lawyer, are right down the street from Maura Healey, the Massachusetts AG, host a meeting at Harvard, run by my mentor in law school, unfortunately, and chaired by the Union of Concerned Scientists, and featuring all of these parties, including a panel on consumer fraud. And it was called Potential State Causes of Action Against Major Hydrocarbon Producers. In other words, how do we get AGs to go after Exxon and Shell and BP and others to affect this agenda? And one of the principal agenda items was, we need to file consumer fraud lawsuits against energy companies, telling essentially to get some ruling or just scare them into settling, that they've been misleading customers into not believing that the customers would cause climate change if they bought their energy. I wasn't aware there was an insufficient megaphone out there for people who claim this and believe it or want to believe it. But that's an argument, and we have it in paper that it was at a meeting that was, quote, for attorneys general staff and prospective funders. So what we have here is we have donors creating a meeting for lawyers and activists to brief other potential donors and attorneys general on how to go after their political opponents. We know that the Massachusetts AG, and we know this because we've sued her and we got documents, sent five lawyers to this meeting. Wow. And lo and behold, is now telling an energy company that she's going to file this suit that she's already agreed, by the way, to put on hold until the court rules if this is even permissible to go forward. So, as I mentioned, it's one abuse heaped on top of another that, if the parties were different, would lead to the end of careers. It would lead to Pulitzer Prizes. It would lead to front page national scandals. If you were to switch the parties and make it the NRA chairing, you know, as I've mentioned, a special prosecutor go after their political opponents, Right to Life to investigate abortion providers, even some conservative trial lawyers, to ask an AG to investigate the scam that we often find in renewable energy industries, you would find the media suddenly stir and realize, oh, I have a role set aside in the Constitution to be the watchdog for various things and avoid abuses. But they've had no interest here because it's such a fashionable cause with which the media generally sympathize. It's against parties that the media don't like, whether it's the groups I've worked with or this oil company or any other coal companies, whomever. And so we see very dangerous double standards, and they're being acted out by attorneys general, congressional hearings orchestrated to help out prosecutions of parties, and AGs acting in the response to donors and tort lawyers. I mean, this is This is completely run amok. You know about this. You've heard of Trump derangement syndrome. Just think about yes. how people can become a little unhinged when they just so feel that things have gotten out of their control and how they expected matters to go and how things usually go.
Right.
And they begin acting in bizarre ways and embracing any theory that rolls down the Autobahn. Well, this is very little different than that. Clearly, if you look at this, people are engaging in behavior that they never would have considered or even deemed to be tolerable in the modern era.
Right.
And the media would never have considered letting go, let alone cheerleading. And yet here we are.
Yeah. Here's just the thought. Rather than appeasing this cadre, couldn't ExxonMobil have better been served by, and for the people, by the way, by beginning a PR campaign directly to the citizens about this?
Well, I see they're doing that now, but I think I told somebody recently, I recall in the very early 2000s, just excoriating general counsels of all sorts of utilities and energy companies, asking, would you please grab your CEO, put a sock in his mouth, duct tape it, put him in the trunk of a Buick and drive to the Meadowlands or somewhere and get them from running around the world. There's a scheme we've talked about, rent seeking, which is, well, maybe I can find a way to make a little money off this.
Right.
It's why Enron and BP created this whole global warming industry. And I was in the room, so let's not waste time trying to disown me of that. I was in the room with them, Union of Concerned Scientists and so on. It's what introduced me to and opened my eyes to this. Well, CEOs were running around saying, boy, I'm killing the planet and I really need to be paid not to. That's why industry was pushing cap and trade. They had these great schemes. Enron cooked it up. BP had their beak in this. Utilities like Synergy, which I don't believe exists any longer, Duke Energy, they were all behind this because they thought there was a great scheme in this for them to guarantee what are called rents or gushers of revenue by state edict. Well, that is where industry spent far too much of its time. Now, during much of that time, ExxonMobil was about the lone holdout because its CEO at the time, Rex Tillerson, had come up in the business of studying renewable energy and whether it could ever not be a ward of the state and so on. And he came up with the answer, no, this is always going to be a welfare case. Let's focus on producing energy and making a profit.
Right.
Well, when Rex Tillerson retired, a lot of things changed. And so some years were wasted with a lot of companies, and I suggest possibly with ExxonMobil too. And so now, fortunately, I give them credit, they're fighting back, whether it was just because the demands for settlement were too high or they realized, you know where this ends, right? This right. ends with your extinction or you become essentially a state-owned company.
Right.
Okay, well, that's water under the bridge. You're here now and you're fighting. And there was a big victory real quickly. Chevron won a case because it had been subjected by abuse and rigged processes and so on in a lawsuit against it in Ecuador, where videotapes showed the judge has been paid off and you know, these crazy outtakes where they had the camera rolling, where the plaintiff's lawyer was admitting to all sorts of matters that led to him getting disbarred.
Right.
Well, Chevron won that one, and I think it's emboldened a lot of industry to say, you know, enough of this sort of beaten dog syndrome. We can fight back and we can win.
Mm-hmm.
It's hopefully not too late, and it's hopefully not too little.
Right. Well, very important question. Believe it or not, our time is done. Chris, where can the listeners follow and support your excellent work and the work of government accountability and oversight and purchase your books like Red Hot Lies and the Liberal War on Transparency?
I was just posting something up about Red Hot Lies. That is, if you want to see this, what's going on laid out in an amusing manner, Red Hot Lies. But those are all available at Amazon.com. You can watch us at govoversight.org or climatelitigationwatch.org, where we've been breaking all of these public records, many, many more this week, last week, and the week before. Might have been our busiest 3 weeks ever. And you can see the documents laying out this sordid abuse of office.
Excellent. And as always, I'll have that info and links that Chris shared in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the honor button, and right under the show description, you'll find everything you need to follow and support Chris's work. Thanks so much, Chris, again, for taking the time to share your assessments with us. Will you join us again on the show? Yes.
You bet. Thank you so much, Audrey.
Excellent. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.